The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericaempowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis, with your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro. This program will catapult your awareness in the mastery of power, influence, and persuasion. Journey to the uncharted conversations of human interactions and discover your winning capital. Now, from the boardroom to the bedroom with Suzanne Z. Pedro.
Good day, everybody. I always enjoy and have a privilege when I get to welcome back a special guest that's been requested by the audience. So some of y'all might have heard just a snippet of her before, but today we have a full hour that she's really going to be able to get in depth with it. Her name is Amanda Taylor, and she's a professional dancer. I'm going to try to go through this list, but she's also teaches I'm going to need help with this, Ayurvedic practitioner, a spiritual counselor, and she continues as inspiration and discussion on holistic healing and goes back and gives a little synopsis of how did it come about. And the interesting thing is that she has been under the tutelage of some of the most renowned worldwide, not local, but I'm talking about down in India and the places where it really has originated. And she's going to bring all her knowledge to us, and I can't wait to find out how we can combine the healing principles with dancing, which you do so perfectly. So I welcome Amanda Turner. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Suzanne. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah, it seems like we're covering a wide range of topics today, with the Ayurveda and into spirituality and dance. But they're all things that I'm very passionate about, and I'm also bringing them together in real time. So it's a very relevant discussion.
You know, like I said, you've been on before, but a lot of people, they really don't even, you know, much less I can't pronounce it, Ayurveda, correct?
Ayurveda, yeah.
Ayurveda. Okay, if you could just give a brief synopsis to tell the few that, you know, weren't listening before, that couldn't join us on the program, what is it? What does it do?
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, as I explained the last time we had a conversation, IU means life, and Veda is knowledge or science. So it's the knowledge or science of life, of all life. And that's the philosophy and the principle that Ayurvedic holistic medicine works on. It encompasses all of life, and it works, you know, with the body, mind, and the spirit, bringing it all into balance and harmony and wholeness, you know, oneness. So we're working from that rather than trying to fix something that's broken. We're working from a place of wholeness and also, you know, profound healing, not only just, you know, aches and pains in the body, but really on all the levels, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, everything.
Now, would you say Shiva, is that Shiva? He's supposed to be the god of the deity, the high deity. And what confuses me about him, you know, he talked about self-control and celibacy, but at the same time about the love of his spouse. But then on the flip side, he was also known as the destroyer. So I kind of was trying to figure out, like, it's kind of the yin and the yang of one deity. Can you explain?
Yeah, He's not actually, the god of Ayurveda or anything like that. But in Hinduism, there are three gods. There's Brahma, the creator, Vishnu, the sustainer, and Shiva, who is also the destroyer. Because for new life to be born, there has to be death or destruction, right? So it's a cycle. There's a death, a new birth, and a sustaining in between of all of that, of all life. So it's just about the creation cycle, really. And so Shiva is not, he's not only representative of destruction, actually very representative of fertility and the masculine energy.
Wow. So he's not, like you said, he's like, it's almost like if you're Christian, the three heads, the three trinities, that this each one does something that comes to a whole. Is that pretty much like what the, the underlying theology would be? Like you're just saying, the death and the destruction, and then you have to have that before you have the fertility and the other two gods. It seems like there's some kind of comparable level.
Yeah, there's always some likenesses. I think the underlying spirit of all of these philosophies and religions is that, that there is this oneness and cycle of life. For new things to be born, there has to be death or transformation. Not always necessarily death, we're just transformed, and out of that transformation comes something new. And then in between that is the sustaining of life. So yeah, it's very similar.
So, Amanda, let's say, how can some of the listeners, it seems like it's not something you can just pick up in a book. How do you go about being able to break through this tradition and learn and to heal yourself?
Yeah, you can get books on, basic books on Ayurveda. I do, it is, as well as it being a very rich and deep science, it's also very simple. There are very simple things you can do. And I think today it's... it would be kind of important to bring out a few basic things that people can do in their lives just to start adopting some Ayurvedic principles, because they really do bring about good health and balance. And rather than just talking about it, I think it'd be useful to actually share some of the tools of Ayurveda.
With some of them, like for beginners, what would start out?
Well, obviously the first and foremost would be a healthy diet, and the way Ayurveda works, because everybody's definition of healthy is so different, and there are so many different diet plans and strategies out there, Ayurveda works on the principles of eating seasonally, eating with the seasons and what's available both locally, produce that's available locally. And also, eating what's in season. No processed foods, nothing out of a package or a can. Just using local produce and making fresh food. Nothing frozen, because the life force has gone out of it, right? If it comes out of the freezer, it's a dead product.
That's so true.
And no leftovers.
Yeah,
and
I was reading something in research about the diet. They saying that you should have, I can't remember all six, like, you should have, like, the sweet first, because, like, that takes the longest to digest and process. And they have the list, I can't remember all the six on the list, but you should have something sweet, something sour, and something salty. And there was supposed to be like a progression of the way that you should eat it.
There are six tastes in Ayurveda: sweet, sour, salty, bitter, pungent, and astringent. And a healthy meal would consist of all of those six tastes. But I wouldn't agree with eating the sweet first. I think that would either come at the end, or it's actually woven into the meal. You know, a lot of the Indian meals or even Western meals that are prepared Ayurvedically, they are very well balanced with the flavors. So you get all of those six flavors in your meal.
And that's for each meal accordingly, or just like for the whole day consumption?
Well, usually in each meal, yeah, in each meal. It's very easy to do, you know. There are herbs that are more sweet. There are herbs that are more astringent. It's very easy to add pungent with garlic, salt. It's really in the cooking spices. I think another useful Ayurvedic tool for people at home would just be to have the basic Ayurvedic cooking spices on hand, you know. We use cumin, coriander, turmeric a lot. Okay. Turmeric's a really valuable one that I wanted to really share with the listeners because it's anti-inflammatory, it's antiviral, antibacterial, antifungal. It's good for everything.
Wow, wow. Is the turmeric the yellow pound?
Yes, and it stains everything. So, yes, careful.
I thought so. And sometimes do you also add different kind of herbs to your cooking as major supplements?
Yeah, you can use literally, if you're doing a cleanse, you can use medicinal doses of those spices of cumin, coriander, turmeric to your dish that you're eating so that it really cleanses and balances the system. You wouldn't want to do that every day, but you can cook with those spices every single day. And, you know, black pepper is really, really helpful for the digestive system.
Uh-huh.
It also helps with weight loss. And ginger also. Ginger is very good for the digestive system.
Have you heard of anything specific to black sesame seeds?
Specific to what?
Black sesame seeds.
Oh, black sesame seeds. Well, they are used in rituals, actually. But no, I'm not. I don't specifically use them for dietary needs.
Oh, I think that's more like on the Oriental side that they use it. I'm getting confused with my herbs and different things. But
they are used in Ayurveda for ritual, if you want to do a cleansing ritual of some kind of ancestor or spirit that might be attached to you or some kind of entity, you can use black sesame seeds with milk and do a ritual with those.
So that would be something like really good to get rid of energy vampires, huh?
Yes, it would. If you have an energy vampire, that would be a good use for it.
But I think when you say that, to keep the natural homeostasis going in your body, you got to do these regimens daily, not like on a on and off basis. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. Now, here's the thing with Ayurveda, you know, if you start trying to do it all in one go, it can be overwhelming. So you do a little bit at a time, you know. When I started my Ayurvedic lifestyle, I just started with some basic things, and they just become part of your daily habits, you know, then you end up doing them all the time, and you don't notice it, you know. You just add them in gradually. So you can start by, you know, paying a little attention to your diet. And also in Ayurveda, you know, we eat according to our unique body type. So it's not one size fits all.
Amanda, when we come back from break, then maybe we can go a little bit into detail about, you know, the different body types. So we'll be back with Amanda Turner. Thank y'all.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
Are you a business innovator or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Have you ever noticed that sometimes life just feels easier, especially when judgment of you or anyone else ceases to exist? What if you could function from that space all the time? What if gratitude is the key? Every time you are grateful for someone or something, a new universe opens up. What difference can you create in your life and the world from the energy, space, and consciousness of gratitude? Join us on Access Consciousness presents Beyond Saying Thank You every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet?
Why not?
Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for the keywords Voice America. Once you are part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings of the Voice America Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our wall. Just go to Facebook.com/Voice America or search for Voice America.
It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed. VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
We're back with Amanda Turner, and we were just discussing the different body types that are specific to nutritional needs under the Ayurveda program. So, I'll throw it back to you, Amanda.
Hi, Suzanne. Yeah, so you know, the Ayurvedic principles of body types works on that, you know, we have all the elements within our body. It's just that everybody's made up slightly differently, just like, you know, fingerprints are all different. So we all have our own unique constitutions, but they are made up of the same three doshas, which in Ayurveda they're called Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. And they just relate to the elements, right? So a Pitta person will be more fiery, and a Vata person was usually a lighter frame, and a Kapha person is usually usually have a slightly bigger bones or a more heavy makeup. And, you know, we eat our diets according to that constitutional makeup. So what's good for one person isn't necessarily the right diet for somebody else.
I recall Dr. Oz had, I think it was Dr. Oz had a book on it about how to eat for your blood typing, the different blood typings, which it seems would make sense because, you know, your DNA, your chromosomes make up that different physique and body type. So
I think that's a little different. That's just this different paradigm, though. But it's probably, you know, working along a similar idea, only the paradigm of that is different. In Ayurveda, it's to bring about balance and harmony in the body rather than you are a specific type, therefore you only eat those foods. That's actually not how it works. It's more about where all of the elements, but if you tend to have more of a higher level of Pitta in your system, in your body, then you would want, that's the fire element, you would want more cooling foods, right, if the Pitta is out of balance. And if it's not out of balance, it's fine. You can eat everything. Although Pitta people do tend to eat hot, spicy, and oily foods, and that's the worst things they could actually eat, you know. Also causes hair loss in men. You know, you get a lot of male Pitta types, sort of competitive, fiery types, and, you know, if they're eating a lot of hot, spicy foods and oily foods, you know, they're going to lose their hair. So there are lots of benefits to really paying attention to your physical type and what kind of foods you need to stay balanced.
So when I was reading about the anti-Pitta food regimes, and it said that the herb Amiya in large doses of Shavana Prash or the major supplements use to kind of help balance that out. So that, I guess that's where I was going, like, you know, the different supplements, herbal supplements that besides the food nutrition that you might not just get because you have a low level in your system. So,
yeah, well, you know, chow and prush is, it's sort of like a jam or a compote made of a few different ingredients. And what we use that for is to build up immunity. It's really a rejuvenative substance. So in Ayurveda, that's called a rasayana. It builds the blood, you know, so it builds the strength, it builds the immunity. And, you know, you can just have a teaspoon of that a day, or if you're recovering from an illness or weak, you can have, more than that. But it contains ghee and different herbs. Yeah, so it is very useful, and it can also be given to children and elderly people. It's very useful. It's just good for building the immunity.
Amanda, I'm sure a lot of people are sitting there wondering, like, well, how do I know I'm, you know, this type of person or deficient in that? How would one go about getting, a harmony balance check for then, you know, nutrition?
Well, there are quizzes you could take. The best way, obviously, is to go to an expert, is to go to a practitioner, because we do a full diagnosis through a pulse diagnosis and tongue. We check many things, and we also ask a lot of questions. And, you know, usually when somebody walks in the room, I usually have a really good indication of who they are, simply from the way they walk, the way they talk, the way they move their body. A lot of it is appearance, too, certain features, certain body builds, right? So people can be unexpected, but generally, if you're experienced, you can get a good idea of somebody's dosha when you meet them. So it's actually a really good tool for everything in life, you know, in the workplace. It's very useful to know who you're dealing with.
It sounds like you almost like being able to, in one, we call it micro expressions and nonverbal communication.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's why I really love it in conjunction with the other things I do. Because, you know, I have a long background in dance. So kind of like the combination of the two, of really observing the way somebody moves and how they move through space and how they act and speak with, combining that with the Ayurveda.
Were you first, Amanda, in dance and then found your way to Ayurveda? Or was it the other way around?
No, I was in dance first. Yeah, I have a long background in dance and movement, and I was a professional dancer first. And then I was always interested in Ayurveda, actually, from being a child, but I didn't really come to explore it and study it until about 10 years ago.
So you've been pretty much, I would say, good student of it. Plus, like I said, the tutelage you under were just amazing, renowned. What do you call them? Teachers or spiritual guides, or what do you, yoga and yogis? What do you call these instructors?
Yeah, all of the above.
Okay.
Yeah, some of them are teachers, some are guides. A lot of them are wonderful practitioners themselves. You know, and yeah, and I think you start, like with anything, you know, you start by learning the philosophy and the system, because it is a complete medical system all unto itself. I just wanted to mention that, because often it gets, you know, the way that Ayurveda has been introduced here, or at least brought into practice, is as a complementary medicine. When, you know, really my understanding and experience of it is really that it's a system all of its own. It's not something that's an add-on, you know. I mean, it can't hurt to do a little Ayurveda as a complement, but it doesn't really work that way. I think, it, you know, the the amazing healing effects of Ayurveda and how it works is if you embrace it as a full system, you know, instead of dabbling in it, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I think it's very valuable.
Don't they, Amanda, incorporate this into their hospital, their medical practices in India?
Is that— Absolutely, Suzanne. Yeah, in India, you go to a hospital and one of the whole departments is Ayurveda, and that's where you go and get treated, and, you know, the very renowned doctors work there, and they use it, you know, in their hospitals. It's not an add-on. It's not like getting a massage or going to have a little, you know, a side—
Right, exactly.
—side treatment. Right. It is an actual valid and profound system of healing, and they use it in all of the hospitals there. And, you know, it would be wonderful to see that happen in this country, only we're quite a ways away from that because it's not licensed, you know. We're kind of working on that right now, trying to bring Ayurveda up to the validity of other systems in this country.
It seems like there's some cancer, you know, centers that try, like you said, it would be an add-on, you know, but they do incorporate it with the holistic realm of nutrition and different things like that. So, like you said, maybe it's slowly, at a very slow level, integrating, but they're realizing that to get the body back in balance, you know, and take more.
It's all about understanding it properly, because a lot of nutritional schools, you know, they'll throw in a little bit of Ayurveda, like a weekend, and that's not really enough. You know, that's not really even gaining any kind of understanding of it. And I've been at lectures where people have said, oh, you know, but Ayurveda doesn't work or what have you, and they've maybe studied it for 2 hours.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think if you have a really in-depth understanding of Ayurveda, it's very intelligent and it works on every level of life. So, it definitely works. It's just a question of people getting a full understanding of the system.
Well, this is what I want to ask you next. We have like 2 minutes before break, and I was just wondering, is there any way for Ayurveda, without being fully trained in it, to use it, you know, I know not to degree, but I guess as a beginning, as a platform, and if so, when we come back, could you give the top 5 tips on how to be balanced in your life using this process?
Absolutely. Let's do that when we get back.
Okay, and with all your knowledge, and I just can't wait, because in the next segment we'll be talking a little bit more about the implementing dance with this. How old is Ayurveda? 5,000-6,000 year old?
It's over 5,000 years old, yeah.
So somebody's doing something right back then, and we're still continued and, you know, actually being applicable, like we just discussed, in discussing in Indian hospitals. And is that the only— is it contained to just Indian hospitals using this, or do you know any other regional around there?
Well, you know, it originates from India, so you know, having it in the hospitals over there it makes sense. It's not necessarily there. I'm sure there are other parts of the world where Ayurveda is much more widely used. It's just starting to get popular a little bit more, but it's not really something, you know, like a fad thing, but it's definitely starting to find its way into people's lives.
Oh, great, Amanda. We're switching out to break right now, and we're just going to finish, you know, our topic on that before we hit dance. So we'll be back, y'all, with Amanda Turner. Thank you.
Build your better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate, change, succeed.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the Internet? Choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Do you feel like sometimes you just don't know where to start with your health and fitness routine? Every week, you can hear from people who have been where you feel that you are right now and find out how they moved forward and are living their best lives ever. It's called Lifestyle 360, and your host is Nicole Monier. Get inspired to take control of your health and your life. Tune into Lifestyle 360 every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel.
Are you ready to move to your next level? Listen for Empowering Women, Transforming Lives with host Rebecca Hall Greider. Each show will focus on a central topic with discussion, guests, and your questions being featured. Our show is perfect for women who feel a call in their heart to step out in a bigger, more powerful way in their life and just need some encouragement, inspiration, and practical steps to support them on their journey. Empowering Women, Transforming Lives can be heard live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Empowerment.
Build a better business. Achieve that goal. Make good on that resolution. The Voice America Empowerment Channel. It's your world. Motivate. Change. Succeed.
This is From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis with Suzanne Z. Pedro. To reach the show today, give us a call at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send us an email anytime to protocolpraxis@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
As my special return guest, I have Amanda Turner, spiritual counselor, professional dancer, Ayurveda practitioner and healer. And we were just going to be talking about, like, if you start out and you have no knowledge without being fully trained in it, I was asking Amanda what would be five tips and how to, you know, become more balanced in your life.
Okay, well, I'm going to just go for this on all the levels, actually, Suzanne, because for me it's not all about the body and it's not all about the diet. That's a piece of it, yes, but it's not the entire piece. So I have a few tips. You know, one is to, you know, obviously eat appropriately. Eat seasonally, eat right for your body type, as we've discussed earlier today. So that would be the whole, you know, taking care of the physical body. Also, something that's very important also to me is to move and to dance. Yoga is also the sister science to Ayurveda. They're very interlinked. We use yoga as a therapy to balance out a lot of imbalances in the body and the mind also. So I would say, you know, yoga and movement and dance are very important. It's just as important to keep the body moving as it is to sit still. And then the other piece of that, I would say, is the stillness practices, you know, contemplative practices, praying, meditation, just sitting in stillness and really connecting with oneself inside. So you see how it's working holistically. It's not just, oh, let's just focus on the body. We're also focusing on the mind and calming the mind and observing the mind and working through yoga and dance. You can really work things out of the emotional body. You know, when something comes up in the pain body that needs to be released, can be very easily moved out with dance. And a couple of other things I have for you are sleep, right? You know, waking up at ideally, you know, with the sun, so a little before 6 is ideal. depending where you live, and going to bed at a reasonable time so the body can really heal and do its healing work during the night and balance the hormones. Very important to sleep. And I have another one, which is
okay.
A little different for you all. It's love. You know, there's an awful lot of healing in the power of love and how you move through your life, you know, how you treat others and your capacity to love yourself and therefore love others. And it's a very rich healing tool, you know.
You're absolutely right, because all the studies show that, you know, couples that are married stay, you know, that are in love, stay together longer than, say, when a husband loses his wife. It's people, even though it's a high divorce rate, the people that stay together are more healthier. And even if you don't have somebody present in your life, even the love of an animal, just, you know, to be able to share and just...
Yeah, well, when we're in love, we give off oxytocin, which is like the feel-good hormone, right. And that has shown to that has been scientifically shown to produce neuroplasticity in the brain. So we can actually change the way we're hardwired and really have some profound healing going on just through being in love, you know? Very important.
The love drug, the love hormone, I mean, oxytocin, and there's so many ways, and you named so many just different ways, like the different foods you could eat, walking, you know, to exercise, anything to get your endorphins going up. And did you even know they said one of the ways to increase oxytocin levels, research showed that by participating in social media like Facebook, just, you know, for people that maybe are locked up and shut-ins and they don't have connections with other people, that gives them away. So believe it or not, good old Facebook can kick out those oxytocins too. So,
well, it's very validating for people, yeah, because it creates connection, right? So if somebody's feeling isolated or unloved, they can connect with others through social media, and that's why it's becoming so addictive, because there's such a lack of connection person to person in the world we're in today, you know, that people are really missing that connection and sitting with others as you would in some kind of spiritual counseling. You know, that sitting with others is very important for our survival. So when that's missing, people need to feel validated and seen. There are a lot of power in feeling seen and heard. That's where people are getting it. They're getting it through social media, but it would be obviously much better if we could do it in person.
Well, Amanda, you're right, because they said the research shows that one of the uplifting things when people go to mass or church or any kind of religious gathering where they sing and they have that sense of community, that sense of belonging. And so Facebook is virtual, where, you know, some people that can get out, you know, that is shut in. So it has brought some good things along with some not so good things, but that's another topic here or there. I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about your spiritual counseling. That interests me.
Yeah, well, it is a little different, too, because, you know, into spirituality, or spirituality is, it really has nothing to do with religion. It's the underlying essence, the spirit underneath everything that connects everybody, the thing that connects us all together as one. So that whole connection comes through, you know, when I do spiritual counseling. It's not therapy. It's not like, I think you were interested in asking me the difference between, what's the difference between spiritual counseling and therapy? And therapy works from the assumption, you know, that there's a sick person and a well person, and the well person is going to fix the sick person. I was putting it very simplistically, but, you know, that's kind of the idea. Whereas spiritual counseling, we work from the basis that we are already whole, that we're already in wholeness. And it's that, it's almost like the indigenous people use a lot when they just sit together. You know, there's a sitting with another person that really holds the space, and it allows, if somebody's going through something or a difficult time or a transition, or they just need to feel that companionship through whatever they're going through, then they can sit with a spiritual counselor, and it really works the same as Ayurveda. It's self-healing. You have your own answers within you, you know, and they start to come forth. Oh, and as a spiritual counselor, you know, obviously we have different tools and ideas and ways in which we can support and hold that and encourage it. And but it's not acting from the idea that somebody's sick and we're going to fix them, you know.
So how would an individual know if I'm feeling great, you know, my life's great, why do I need to go to a spiritual counselor?
Well, maybe you have some area in your life that you're curious about. You know, it's not, if everything's going great, then you're probably, you know, in a space where you're not feeling curious about something, or there's not a whole lot of change going on in your life. But as we know, nothing stays the same for very long. So inevitably, we're always going through transitions. And a lot of my work is around transitions of any kind, whether it's a job, a family, relationship, you know, life transitions, divorce, so, just changes of going through different stages of your life.
So, Amanda, let me ask you a question. It's so hard these days balancing, people balancing their life, their job, their children. How do you, with what you have on your plate, being a spiritual counselor, being a practitioner, Ayurveda, and also being a dancer, choreographer, how do you do that, and what practices do you incorporate?
Actually, I do use a lot of meditation in my, I kind of weave those three things together as much as I can, Suzanne. Like, I never used to, they used to be more separate, and now the Ayurveda and the meditation and the spiritual practice really informs my dance work and my choreography work more and more. So it all becomes one for me. And I think that's, you know, a way that people can bring more balance into their lives too, is to try and integrate things a little more, so that their lives are just more inclusive and integrated, instead of trying to be too many different things, you know?
I can get overwhelming, and then where does the person that helps the other people, like you yourself, when you get overwhelmed, do you reach out to, like you said, those practices? Do you meditate? Do you find any, when you're real stressed, is there any certain diet or something that you know, re-energizes you the most?
Yeah, well, for me, one big thing I meant to mention earlier in our talk is communing with nature. For me, I just love to be in nature, and if I can take a walk or go to the park, or, you know, I live in the city, so I don't have a lot of access. I spend a lot of time in the park, and try and get out if I can to somewhere beautiful or to the ocean. I feel that that's a really big grounding factor for people. And I generally don't get overwhelmed. You know, I have my own, you know, spiritual practices. I have a spiritual director. I also, I meditate, you know, and I do think the very, very important thing for everybody is to get enough sleep. And one other thing, Suzanne, is stillness. You know, I think people get overwhelmed because they're running around too much. I think it's a bit of a paradox. If you sit still and meditate, it changes everything, and you get a lot of clarity, and you calm down, you get answers to problems that you maybe haven't had a chance to think about, you know. And it might seem like it's hard to take that time out of the day, but it's well worth it. You know, it ends up being really adding a lot of value to your life and making things very manageable indeed.
What about the people that, you know, you mentioned sitting down? What about the people that just concentrate and they can't get away from computer or the television and they just, you know, like almost an addiction that, what would you suggest to, you would use some of the same methods like tell them to get outdoors and...
Yeah, get outdoors, get in nature. And we talked about this earlier too, connecting with other people. You know, because that's all it is. It's a hunger or a need to connect with people. That's why people get so locked into their computers and phone calls. And, you know, I think you can do it in person too. Go out and actually meet with somebody or connect with others, you know, through some kind of meetup group or something like that.
Well, there's a lot of movement in yoga and breathing and everything. Now, how do you incorporate? Now, how do you even begin to choreography a dance?
Well, that's really interesting. Usually I get an idea, an inspiration from something, or oftentimes the music will inform what I'm doing. I'll hear a beautiful piece of music, or I'll have an emotional story, an idea that I want to express, and I'll then search for a piece of music that speaks to that and says what I want to say. And I do a lot of the choreography actually through meditation. I'll sit and listen to the music over and over again, and I'll visualize the kind of movements that it just kind of comes to me while I'm sitting and visualizing and absorbing the music. And then I get up and I try to embody what I have envisaged, you know. I'll see it in my mind's eye, and then I get up and I try and put it into my physical body. And that's when I work with other dancers, too. You know, you see what's possible. Often what I envisage is a lot more intricate and, you know, a little, you know, very unusual movements, and then I have to play with it and see, is this actually physically possible for somebody to do?
So it's totally a whole creative process for you from beginning to end. And when you see your work, your art completed, like, I think, isn't this weekend you're having, you choreographed a show for this coming up weekend in New York?
Yes, I have a couple of things going on this next weekend, the 13th and 14th. I choreographed a piece for a ballet company. I did a residency with Ben Brion's Ballet, and I choreographed a piece for them solo. And then I'm also dancing myself in a spiritual summit for global change, where we have a section on arts and transformation.
And wow. I mean, how different coming from, being a ballerina, a dancer, and then going to, like, you know, being an actor and then going to being a director. Is it hard to switch hats from, like, being a dancer to a choreographer?
Not at all. Not for me. I honestly, at this stage, I feel like my whole, everything I do is a sort of moving meditation, but it requires different tools, yes. I mean, there's the meditative part, there's the creative process that comes out of the stillness, there's the presence that is required to really inspire others, and there's, like you said, there is a little bit of a leadership quality or a director's hat that I do have to have structure sometimes to just, you know, pull all the pieces together and actually have them all happen. So,
and you said that so eloquently because, I mean, people don't see where dance maybe fit in from the boardroom to the bedroom, but you just said you have to have the leadership qualities. You have to be able to follow, take orders, structure, all those different components, and I can see where dance can be very empowering to, you know, to, like you also said, to please others. That gives you energy, momentum to keep on going when you see, to hear that applause or just to see the smiles on people's faces. That's just got to be a very empowering moment.
Yeah, a lot of the choreography I'm doing now, and especially at the Spiritual Summit, which is on September 13th in New York City, there, you know, a lot of the pieces I'm doing now are just very inspiring on an emotional level. They really speak to people. It's a form of information or communication. So I'm not really doing it so much for entertainment or applause. It's really to invoke or to inspire change and have people feel inspired and say, well, what can I do? Or how can I embody these things in my life? How can I move in the world in a better way? You know?
Oh, I can see, you know, you're looking for a change too, I see. Going from New York to Lake Como, I heard. You're having a big retreat there. Is it September 17th?
It is. It is, Susan. Yeah, we're going to Lake Como on a yoga and meditation retreat that I'll be leading. And I'm also going to be guiding people through some different creative processes and moving meditations. So it'll be sort of integrating dance and meditation and yoga and other creative processes. And it's in this beautiful place on the hill by Lake Como. So, you know, we're just in a beautiful, magical spot. So I'm hoping people will come back really inspired from that.
Amanda, could you give some information, your contact information, in case somebody, if there's any availability, that they would like to go?
Yeah, it's short notice, but if it's really calling to somebody, if they feel it, it's the right thing for them, they can email me, Suzanne. It's amanda@iuhealingarts.com, and you spell that A-Y-U, Healing Arts. So amanda@iuhealingarts.com, they could drop me an email, or, and actually I don't think that email address is on your website, but that's where I can be reached in general for other things also.
Okay, we're about ready to close the show. And within like 30 seconds, what would you give the audience one thing to go away with?
Go away with?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I always come back to the same thing, back to love. I'm going to bring it in on oneself. So, you know, love yourself. Do something today that allows you a few moments of stillness, and go be in nature for a few moments, and just to see how that like spreads through your day. And you know, that's kind of, I think that's very empowering, you know.
Oh, that's wonderful piece of advice, especially in this day and age with everybody at each other's throats, warring countries. So thank you so much for being my guest, Amanda Turner.
Thank you so much.
And
for
I hope everybody, you know, takes heed and goes, drops her email, and maybe sees her in one of her dance auditions. Who knows? You might be the next. Thanks so much, Amanda. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Susan. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
You too. Bless you. And we'll be talking to you soon. Bye bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Everybody have a great day, and bye, y'all.
Thank you for tuning in this week. Your host, Suzanne Z. Pedro, will be back again next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for another edition of From the Boardroom to the Bedroom, the Protocol Praxis. We hope you'll join us as well.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaEmpowerment.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.